Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am here with Colin Drew on our weekly GPP show. When Colin is on the show, it's going to be much more organized. When Leonie and I do the show, it's just going to be like arguing about like decimal differences in the projections and Leonie trying to justify Odell Beckham. But when Colin does the show, we got an outline. We had some pre-show discussion, so we know what you're about to receive. Good or bad week incoming, you think, Drewby?
Hopefully a good one. I mean, we need to give the people some winners this week. Last week was an all right one for me on the main slate. I lost a little bit, but GPP life, I felt like I was live. I put together some good teams. My best team was like a Mahomes triple stack with Derrick Henry. Didn't quite get there, but at least felt like I was getting shots on goal last week versus, you know, the weeks where you feel like your process is all kind of screwed up and you never really close as soon as the slate locked. So
I didn't stack Atlanta, New Orleans at all in any, like, so I thought that was pretty good. What sunk me last week was Evans and Godwin just being like middling. Like I probably would have been like plus 20% in GPPs had one of those guys gotten 30.
Yeah, and I think I lucked out a little bit on some of the plays, like Ronald Jones. And
no,
then,
there was no luck involved there. Ronald Jones, just everyone knew. Everyone knew it was Ronald Jones' start season. He was going to be – everyone knew he was getting eight catches, you know.
Yeah, totally. On what, 35, 40% of the snaps.
Yeah, that's what we had projected him for, I think. I think it was just completely reasonable, you know.
And then Dave Montgomery, obviously, was a big mess.
Never again. Never again with this guy. I broke my rule, which is just don't play David Montgomery, really, is the rule.
Yeah. And the Stafford news coming late there was kind of what sealed it, because that was when you felt like the game script couldn't possibly go a bad way for Montgomery, because you always knew, like, they're in a bad game script, that Cohen could be involved, and you figure, well, now Stafford's out, so the chances of a bad game script aren't there anymore. But, oof, that was
He that had the game script. Doctor. The game script didn't even get away from him. The Bears are just so bad.
Yeah. A lot of injuries last week as well. We've got this new segment of the podcast. We're going to start out the Coffin Corner. Important Love injury it. Situations that could shape the slate to honor the players who died on the field last week for your fantasy lineups, or the players that might have coffined all of your DFS hopes and dreams.
So the first situation we have is Atlanta, and we have two big injuries here. Austin Hooper already declared out for the week. I don't think that this is a Rhett Ellison situation where we're going to be moving a bunch of targets to Luke Stocker or Jaden Graham. I think those guys are going to have very low target projections. But we also have Devonta Freeman, who's not going to be playing. Brian Hill, guest of the Tapecast. He is 4,800 at Carolina on DraftKings.com. He's a lock. He is just and like single entry three max. He just has to be like, he's the best play.
Life comes at you fast, Davis. A few weeks ago, you were tweeting that Brian Hill sucks. And now we've got Brian Hill is a lock for week 11 in NFL DFS. You might have to slip the DMs with Brian Hill and be like, hey, buddy.
You know what? I can, because he follows me now. I should ask him.
What kind of workload are you getting here?
I'm gonna email him right now.
How much are Barner and Olsen going to get involved? Or can we just jam you into 100% of our lineups in this matchup against?
Here's a good tease. I am going to email and or DM Brian. Don't know which one yet. And whatever he answers, I will reveal it in the Daily Roto sub Slack to Daily Roto subscribers. So if you want to know what Brian Hill thinks about his workload this weekend, join dailyroto.com if you have not already.
Love it. So that's obviously big news. I think, you know, confidently we know that Hill is a good pass catching back. So we know that he'll pick up a good bit of workload. We did see him get expanded usage last week in the running game. And Barner was active for that game and still wasn't heavily involved. They really just leaned on Hill. So I do think that the carries and stuff should be there against Hill. I think he's the type of back that if you were going to stack up the Carolina Panthers, you could, you know, be comfortable playing him as a run back. But then also just the vacant targets from Freeman, who was involved in the past game, and then Hooper. The price tags really haven't changed on Julio or Ridley. So I think they're going to be really strong plays this week as well. You know, Atlanta still has a decent total. They're on the road, but I actually like the idea of stacking Atlanta just because it's a little bit more of a condensed offense than we're
Now that we don't have Hooper, like Ridley should be like a functional part of the offense again, which I know pains Michael Leone to hear.
And I guess like even Russell Gage, I feel like is going to be tournament viable in the largest field GPPs because he's just 3,300. And just with Hooper out, you expect some of that work to funnel to him. He has seen, 14 targets the past two games since Sanu has been traded to New England.
Yeah. Okay. I'm on board with all of that. We do have big questions with Arizona. David Johnson looks like he stepped into a forward time machine and he's 56 years old playing running back in the NFL now. It's more than that one clip though, because yes, the one clip he looks miserable, but if you just like go back or if you were just watching that game in general, they were all like that. Like it wasn't one of those situations where there's one out of context clip of a dude running in quicksand. Like he got no burst.
Yeah. I mean, he's just straight dad running out there, which, I'm not ready to like write him off and call him dust for his career. He is coming back off that injury, but he did not look good at all. And getting a full NFL game under your belt and then going back to practice this week or whatever, it's hard to like imagine it miraculously getting better this week. And just the usage, you could see they still leaned on Drake pretty heavily, playing 65% of the snaps in week 10. So I think the lingering injury is going to continue to be an issue. And I mean, it basically takes DJ completely out of consideration. The only question is just whether or not you can trust Drake, or if Drake has kind of some workload upside in the matchup, or if there's just enough cloud to kind of ruin it all.
Chase Edmonds is questionable also. So if Chase Edmonds is back and we have DJ active, we have Drake active and Edmonds active, it's just like, and they're playing San Francisco. It's just, if Edmonds is inactive and DJ's inactive for whatever reason, I would be like, okay, we're jamming Kenyon Drake. I don't even know what he costs, but he would be a jam. But if all three of them are active, it's just an avoid.
Yeah, he's 5.4K in DraftKings. I think it's going to be hard for us to get clear news. We might get clear news on one of the guys, but maybe not on both DJ and Chase before Sunday. It's a 4 o'clock start, like you mentioned. So I think that's going to take Drake out of consideration. And then he would just be there as like a late swap option. Tevin Coleman, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But he's going to be popular. He's going to be a guy that we value a lot. Maybe if both DJ and Chase are inactive, you could late swap some Coleman to Drake where you need to, just because the prices are pretty close. But otherwise, I don't think we're really starting to build around that Arizona RB situation.
Yeah. Okay. So we have the Houston wide receiver situation, which this is going to be the game stack game. This is going to be the game where people actually do the bring backs, which they never do. It'll be, Lamar and Mark Andrews with the Houston guy, Watson with Marquise Brown, and so on and so forth. So Will Fuller coming back in this game. And I love how Will Fuller has one game above 10.1 PPR points, but he just first game back 5,800. Just no rest for the wicked from DraftKings pricing.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, the one game was when he smashed just in like the chalkiest spot of all time.
I can't even talk about it. He was like 50% owned in cash.
Yeah, so I don't know. It'll, we'd like to see like full practice reports from him versus like limited, or something like that throughout the week. I do think if he's active, he's going to be in play given the game environment and the fact like Baltimore, they're so good offensively and they're so efficient that they can get up on you really quick. And if that does happen, it can force teams to play really aggressive. You saw Tom Brady attempt 46 passes against the Ravens when New England got behind, and Watson could be forced to throw a lot more than he usually would, which I think even at the inflated price tag, Fuller probably won't carry quite as much ownership at that price as he might otherwise. And I think that's going to kind of bring him into tournament play, especially if you're trying to run it back with some Lamar teams. Just the way that Baltimore is so efficient on offense, they can throw you into pretty unconventional game scripts immediately.
Darren Fells has to be the cheapest player ever who scored 6 touchdowns, and he's priced at 3,800.
And I still just like can't do it, right?
Dude,
like,
why would you not? Why would you? I don't ever play him as a one-off. I just, when I use him, I just say, exactly one Deshaun Watson. Like, he just, like, if he ever makes any and I don't exclude him either, and I put him in my at least two groups, but I'm like way more aggressive about double stacking than anyone else at Daily Roto, and maybe I need to think about what that means. But I'm so convinced that it's the right leverage play, and that if I stop doing it now, like, it's gonna hit, you know what I'm saying? Like, one of my guys, like Lamar or Deshaun or Dak double stacked, is gonna win $1 million, and I'm gonna not have it. That I will not stop doing it.
I'm pretty aggressive with the double stacks too, to the point sometimes I'll like end up fading a quarterback if I can't double stack him, which isn't great either. Lamar is the tough guy to do it with. I think
I run Lamar naked. He's the only quarterback all year that I've done it with.
I usually solo stack Lamar. Watson, I feel like you could go either way, but I would probably prefer to double stack. But, you know, I think that the solo Watsons can get there too, just because of, you know,
he can score two rushing touchdowns, or he can throw two touchdowns to Darren Fells, and Fells doesn't even end up being the optimal tight end. That also is a thing.
Yeah. So, New Orleans, you know, just small stuff. Traquan Smith returned last week. He played 80% of the snaps, which I thought was pretty interesting. He was targeted just twice in a game where New Orleans threw the ball a lot. So, you know, maybe not as much upside with Smith as we would have hoped, but at least being on the field, feel like he'll be in consideration as, you know, part of that Bucks game, which should be a reasonably popular game to stack as well.
Yeah. The biggest situation of the week, and it's so tilting, the 49ers are playing at home to the Arizona Cardinals. They have the highest team total of the week. Their healthy players are flooding our projection systems. George Kittle is injured. Matt Breida lives in a constant state of being injured, so he will probably be active and probably play in this game against Arizona. And then Manny Sanders is injured, so we have to figure out, like, okay, is this 20% target share for Debo, is this real? Is this not real? Is Kendrick Bourne a thing? Are they going to play Richie James? Shanahan just has finally learned what all of us knew, which is that Dante Pettis is trash. So I don't think we really have to worry about him. But basically, if you have a good projection system, and assuming that you are listening to this, you probably use the Daily Roto projection system, a ton of that stuff is going to feed in from Vegas totals. So what are we thinking with the 49ers and their MASH unit right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be an awesome spot, especially for folks who are plugged in and willing to adapt to any late news that we get there. I'm assuming there will be some clarity kind of on the Manny Sanders situation early.
That'll be a Saturday night Schefter tweet, I bet.
Kittle, I'm thinking, will be a game time decision again, just like he was for Monday night. And I think they have, you know, they'll tip their hand a little bit with the active
call-ups. Yeah,
and Selleck, and whether or not he's still on the roster. But I think he's going to be a game-time decision as well. If Sanders is out, if Kittle's out, then Debo Samuel is going to be an incredibly strong play at just $4,000 in DraftKings. Even if one of those two guys is in, I think that his snap share has been consistent enough in that offense that he's going to be viable at that price tag, especially given the total that we have on that game. So I think Debo Samuel is one of the guys that I'd be pretty comfortable with. You know, essentially the last 3 weeks he's, you know, averaging 70% of the snaps. So that's with Sanders there. I think Bourne is a little bit shakier, and he's kind of more contingent on whether or not Sanders is able to full go or whether or not Kittle is active. So I guess, like, right now I'd be comfortable plugging in Debo Samuel. I'd be pretty comfortable with Tevin Coleman, but that's not going to feel quite as good if Breed is active. Even if he's inactive, you at least have some concerns that you're going to get trolled by Raheem Mostert or Jeff Wilson.
Yeah, that is a very real concern. If Sanders is out, I do think Debo is probably like he's like a lot cash game single entry three max kind of play. Yeah. 4,000 against Arizona, like it's not going to get much better than that.
No, definitely not. And I think you're not going to find a guy with that price tag. You know, you obviously, when you start talking about MME, if the news is clear early in the week, then I expect him to be very heavily owned, like 25-30% owned in tournaments. If the news isn't clear early in the week and it ends up with a game time decision for both Sanders and Kittle, then I don't think he'll be that owned. And I still think you could pretty comfortably play him in tournaments, and you just, you know, have a little bit more risk on the cash side of things.
Right. Yeah. Which, you know, that's fair enough with that. And there is enough good games late this week. You know, we have Cincinnati, Oakland, we have New England, Philadelphia. So, like, there's enough points and potential plays in those late games that you'll have swaps with that stuff if you need it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. That should John Ross might be active this week, I guess, for the bank, like John Ross or AJ Green. AJ Green's not going to play. That's just my professional opinion, is that AJ Green is just not going to play this
year.
Yeah,
it seems like he's not going to play. You know, maybe give it like a half effort in week 17 for, you know, a couple quarters or something like that. But it seems like he's done. John Ross is going to be returning to practice. Then we got the QB situations too. Haskins starting for Washington. We got the Stafford back injury. Not sure what his status is going to be. And then it looks like Nick Foles is going to get his job back for Jacksonville. And it does seem like that's going to impact the Vegas totals or anything like that. But that's all stuff that we'll kind of be monitoring throughout the week. I guess the most important one that would be DFS relevant is if somehow Jacoby Brissett was back and you got T.Y. Hilton back, then.
I think Jacoby Brissett is going to play because he practiced all week last week. And then I think they just decided on Saturday that, we're playing Miami. So we're just not going to do that.
So I'd be at least a little bit interested in Brissett, T.Y. Hilton, just because Brissett has been pretty productive in the games where he's been asked to be.
Yeah. All right. So how would you describe this slate generally? I think this is a great slate, whereas I was looking at the last 2 weeks slates and being like, bro, this is brutal. Like, the last time you and I did this, it was the slate where you just recommended going all in on the 1 p.m. games because there was really only that Seattle-Tampa Bay game. And then last week was just a huge chalk fest, and it was fine. Like, last week was a good, profitable week for me. But I really like this slate because I don't think that there is a bunch of super obvious ways to go. Like, I don't see a ton of locks, and I see a lot of very good plays.
Yeah, I think it's a really good slate. Like, a lot of nuance to the plays. There are some good spots, some potential traps in there. And then it's, you know, you got the news for important games in a late game, important situations in a late game. And I think that always benefits players, DFS players that are really plugged in. Obviously, we update our projections throughout the day at Daily Roto, send out alerts for that stuff too. So as stuff flows through, we kind of are able to update and on the fly there. So I think it looks like the slate should set up with some decent edge, especially if you're willing to late swap, because not many people are. You know, obviously the high stakes folks are, but if you're grinding the 3 max and, you know, $150 and below, people aren't really making swap decisions there. And it seems like swaps could come into play this week.
Definitely. Yeah. And there are, there's just a lot of like very expensive players. So like on DraftKings, Christian McCaffrey, 10.5, Michael Thomas, 9.9, Ezekiel Elliott, 9K. But then there are also, I think, some guys who are weirdly priced. Alvin Kamara is 7,400. That's got to be one of the lowest price tags for him. I can't ever remember him being that cheap. And then at wide receiver, we have stuff like Steph Diggs at 6.9. I thought that was pretty strange. And then some up, like, just they're just to me seem like weird prices. Like, some guys are priced at the tax, and then some guys are priced like way below what I would have priced them at.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And I think also there's a lot of like nuance in the slate as far as the game stacks, because there are a couple games that are high total and, you know, projected within a touchdown. And then there, you know, we talked about Houston Baltimore a little bit. We'll kind of get into some of the game stacks, talk about, you know, the Saints-Tampa games. Those games are high total and close, but then you have some high total teams that are projected to kind of blow out their opponents, whether it's, you know, the Vikings, the 49ers, and so, and the Raiders with surprisingly the highest team total on the entire week, up above 29 points against the Bengals. And how to figure out, like, getting exposure to those games and whether or not you're comfortable, you know, playing onslaughts against really bad teams, or whether or not you just want to pick and choose like a piece.
I love the onslaught versus the bad team and just not forcing the bring back. And though I will say this, though, the Bengals do have two guys you could bring it back with, assuming that John Ross and AJ Green don't play. I think you can bring it back. Well, just one guy, I guess. I think you can bring it back with Tyler Boyd. His role is like consistent enough that I think I probably would use that correlation with Raiders sacks.
Yeah, I think that would make sense. He'd be the guy I'd be comfortable with. And if they're both out, like, even Boyd's going to be involved no matter what. You know, if Green and Ross for some reason both came back, Boyd would just move into the slot. So not worried about him at all. Auden Tate you could consider as a bring back, but only if both those guys remained out.
Yeah. So that's, and New Orleans, Tampa Bay, do you think New Orleans, Tampa Bay, or Baltimore, Houston will be the absolute chalkiest game?
I don't know. I was trying to figure that out. I think Baltimore-Houston, because I feel like there's more of a reason for people to stack I feel like people are going to want to stack both sides of that game a little bit heavier. But
there are less guys that people really like to play on those teams, though. Like, they're like New Orleans, Tampa Bay features like five guys that are just like stone cold chalk every week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. So I was actually thinking that the Tampa side of the Saints game would actually be a contrarian way to play it, just because the Saints, well, their team total's lower, clearly. And then, you know, the Saints defense has been good for most of the year. I think that, especially with Lattimore out for the Saints, it definitely makes it a situation where if the Bucs side of things is contrarian at all, then I'm pretty interested, because I think, you know, 6,500 and 7,500 for Evans and Godwin and 6,500 for Jameis, I think those are reasonable price tags. And usually the Tampa spots where we've seen them be heavily owned, they've been pretty big favorites. When they've been in close games with high totals, but they're underdogs, like against the Rams earlier this season, we haven't seen too much ownership. Maybe I'm wrong with that take, though.
No, I think it seems reasonable. And people just like to play the Saints less when they're on the road. Like, yeah, that's just a thing.
It's a huge thing in like the biggest DFS thing. Content circle. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that definitely matters. What's very interesting is I do not think that Lamar is going to, like, I don't think naked Lamar is the right way to go in tournaments this week. Like, I actually think I would not allow it. And my guess would be is that Marquise Brown is actually going to be like really not owned, even though he came back from that game last week and played really well. I just think that Andrews will be the way more chalk option. Like, I would imagine Marquise Brown, it would be hard for him to get to double digits.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Maybe double digits is doable. And I think that like it would be like a 2-to-1 ownership ratio between Andrews and Brown. Yeah. I guess especially if you're playing Lamar, I think Darren Waller still is probably going to be the highest owned tight end on the entire slate.
I'm working on my tight end, like just like my cash game placeholder while you and I are talking right here. And I'm like, this Waller price, like, what is this? Like, he went from being like somewhat overpriced at like 6.3.
In like toughish matchups.
Yeah. And now I'm just like, well, I'm not going to play this guy now. Like, even when he's been bad against like the Chargers and against Houston, he was getting targets. Now his targets, I will say 5, 2, and 8, like, you know, it's not like the double digit target games anymore, but I mean, just like, come on. He's just such a good play at 5,500.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been tough. It's kind of like as Renfro has been more involved in the offense, you've seen it like eat into Waller and right. Renfro in the slot. It's kind of which one of those guys is running the routes or getting targeted there. And then I guess Zach Ertz, like, I feel like the vast majority of the ownership is going to be kind of sucked up by those three guys. And like you said, like the Lamar teams that make sense, they're going to play Andrews, and the teams that are non-Lamar are going to consider, you know, Andrews, Waller, Ertz, I would think.
Right. Yeah. I mean, do you have a read on cheap tight end? Because that's kind of been the move the last couple weeks. Like, these mega, like last week people were playing tight ends at 2,500 and at 3,100 with Rhett Ellison and Mike Gesicki. I don't think I see anyone quite at that level unless
I think Greg Olson is the kind of floor where people will go for the tight end, just because he's coming off a big week where he's targeted a lot in that game against Green Bay. The Carolina game has a high total. It's a competitive game script, and everyone's used to picking on Atlanta. So I guess Olsen, I feel like, would be the popular cheap punt tight end if you consider 3.9K a punt.
If Kittle is out, I would probably play Ross Dwelly at 3,400, honestly. Like, he's fine. He had 7 targets last week in a competitive game. I would probably just play that guy again.
Yeah, I think he's fine. I guess 3,400. I mean, Olsen versus, like, you might not have the news on Kittle, and I just think Olsen would be the safer play and the more likely route that people go for cash if they're trying to save the $1,500.
Yeah. It's a really interesting week, like, where I still don't have like any strong opinions on like what the optimal way to attack tournaments is this week, because I think there are a lot of coin flip games, like games that I could see going different ways. And I mean, we haven't even talked about Dallas at Detroit, which is like a matchup of two teams that just score a ton of points. Dak Prescott is the fifth highest scoring quarterback in fantasy. The Lions have been just this amazing team for DFS because they have a super concentrated offense. It's Stafford and it's two other guys. And Ty Johnson probably is not going to play this week. And JD McKissick is 4.6K and he has back-to-back games of seven and then four targets. Like, I think he's a good play too.
Yeah, and it's early in the week, so we don't have totals on that game yet. I think waiting on the Stafford news before Vegas kind of put stuff out there, which is why you won't really see the Dallas guys popping a ton until we get kind of a final total for that game. And it'll be interesting to see kind of how that flows through. I think early in the week, you know, one of my favorite games to target was potentially the Carolina Panthers and the Falcons, just because I do like the condensed offense on the Falcons side of things, and I like the value of the stacks there. You know, you kind of have reasonable, like if you're building 20 lineups or 150, but even if you're building 20, you kind of have multiple bring back options on the Atlanta side of things. And you also have multiple ways to stack Carolina, because I do think it's very viable for you to stack Carolina with obviously CMC, and you can add in, you know, one of Curtis Samuel or DJ Moore or Greg Olsen into that three-man stack, or you could stack Allen without CMC and, you know, hope that it's the week where they're able to kind of connect on some of those big plays to Samuel and Moore and kind of run the stack like that, and then the cheap value to bring back. So that was kind of the first game that jumped out to me, was potentially trying to stack the Carolina-Atlanta game multiple ways, and then potentially the Tampa side of things in the Saints game with like a Kamara bring back there.
Yeah, people I think are probably overrating the Panthers a little bit, just thinking that this is going to be like some blowout game or whatever. Like the Panthers are, they're fine, but like I don't think they're going to just like steamroll the Falcons.
Yeah, and then obviously the weather is something that is important too, just as you start to get into these winter months a little bit, and you're not going to have the weather concerns in that game. You know, we did see like Green Bay playing in the snow game, and so most of the late games look like it's going to be dome and whatnot, but like the Patriots and Eagles game, like we don't really know what the conditions going to be like there. So I think the domes and the warm weather locations start to be.
Yeah. Give us a scouting report on what you expect the Patriots to look like now that they've lost a game.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we had talked about it in Slack, and I didn't expect them to win that game in Baltimore. I thought that the Patriots, their defense has been very good, but also a little like running way hot on the turnovers and the touchdowns, and you know, their strength of schedule has been absurdly easy. And so I think that it was like the perfect trap spot for them against Baltimore to have a letdown. And I think you can kind of see it's now reflected. They're only 3-point favorites in Philly. And so I think this will be another close game as well. I would think that Sanu will be a little bit more involved kind of each week. And so you kind of have the offense is a little bit more focused. You know, it's going to be Edelman, Sanu, Dorsett at wide receiver. And then you know that the running backs is going to be kind of a three-man rotation.
Yeah, I think that seems reasonable. Do you think that Sony Michel is a good buy low in seasonal? I kind of do. I think that the market is like about as low as it could ever get on him right now.
Yeah, so I think he probably is. I mean, you know, you're going to get the vast majority of the non-Tom Brady sneaks in the red zone. They're going to go to Michelle. And last year, you know, the Patriots threw more in the warmer weather months. They ran the ball more as the playoffs approached, as the weather got colder. And I mean, a guy like Sony Michelle is always going to have like multi-touchdown upside. And I think when he's in this price zone, like starting to be below $5,000 on DraftKings is when, you know, you start to be able to pay off the price tag with like 100 yards and a touchdown versus needing somebody that's like a three down back who also has pass catching upside. Not really going to get that with Michelle.
All right. Well, do you have any other big takes?
No, I guess I think the biggest thing, like we, you know, the San Francisco situation, I know you're a big Kyler boy, but like, can Kyler keep it close? And Jimmy G stacks are actually something we should be considering, or do we need to spend
entire
week?
Yeah, I wish that Kirk had only scored two touchdowns last week instead of three, because he's gonna pull some ownership this week that he should, like, if he was like 3% owned, Kyler to Kirk would be like so good, because I don't think they're gonna be able to run very well against San Francisco, which is something they did really well in the first matchup. So like, Kyler to Kirk,
I think he'll be 3% owned. Like, I think 2 years ago, I think he would have pulled some ownership, but
But people are too smart now. Yeah.
The matchup against San Francisco is tough, and people are considering all that stuff. Nobody's chasing game logs. So the game log chase is the contrarian play, and I think Kirk for sure will be like 3% owned.
Yeah. Okay. So look, seems like my quarterback pool is going to be Watson, Lamar, Dak, Kyler, Jameis. Like, I don't think I need to play anyone else other than that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be pretty similar there. I'm somewhat interested in Matt Ryan and Kyle Allen. I guess the other guy I'm just trying to figure out would be potentially Jimmy G and playing this game stack and playing it via the passing game opposed to trying to figure out like which of the three running backs is going to get there. But that's why I was curious if you felt like Kyler could keep it close, because you need the quarterbacks to keep the foot on the gas. You know, you need that 300-yard multi-touchdown upside in order to get there.
There we go. It's lit. Kyler's going to keep it close, man. You see how good he is, dude? It's very interesting. And I was listening to, of course, the BS Report podcast about Cliff Kingsbury, and they were praising him, and they were saying like how aggressive he is, and they were citing that fake punt to Farrell Cooper as an example of it. But you know what? He's actually like very not aggressive. And if he would be more aggressive on these fourth downs, like, I mean, I think the Cardinals could like, well, first of all, I think the Cardinals would be a playoff team if they were in the AFC. Like, the Cardinals are like better than the Steelers, who is probably going to get the sixth seed. They're better than the Bills. But if they were just more aggressive overall at pushing the ball down the field and going for it on fourth down, like, they're a good team. Their offense is good. They are fourth in the NFL in rushing efficiency, and Kyler has been good too.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff for them has been less like moving the ball right. It's like touchdown efficiency, and I feel like that's where you get frustrated too as a guy who's always loaded up on Kyler and DFS is
the field goals.
Fourth and two, and like on the 30-yard line, and they're kicking the field goal instead of going for it.
All right.
Should be a fun week, though. I would say, yeah, you know, my parting words would be just like, it's going to be a slate where late news is really important. You're going to want to build your lineups as close to lock as possible after the 11:30 inactives come out, and you're going to want to stay plugged in to news throughout the day. So if you're not planning to do that, maybe play the 1 p.m. only. But if you're looking for an edge, I think it is a great slate for a news edge and a great slate for people who are willing to build their lineups as late as possible.
There we go. There you go. Use the late swap. Check out dailyroto.com if you need that Brian Hill update. And we will be back tomorrow with the flagship show.